Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com, TheDorkForest.com. Have you gone to that recently? It goes to the same place as the rest of them. I am on the podcast network All Things Comedy. AllThingsComedy.com has a bajillion podcasts that you can listen to if you are looking for other podcasts in your life, mostly done by stand-up comics. And I recommend you get with it. Okay, let's do the credits. Patrick Brady, gonna fix this audio. Mike Rickberg composed the theme song 100 years ago, and it's still great. He sings it with his girlfriend, Sarah Cohen. The first episode of the pre-recorded episode was an episode with Mike Rickberg where he sang what I now play as the end of the program, the Mexican Hat Dance, with lyrics made up by Mike Rickberg. Still funny. Still funny. Lo, these many years later. We're in our 9th year, by the way, you guys, of doing the Dork Forest, Dork on Dork Dialogue. You can donate to the show. If you enjoy the program, feel free to donate $10 a month to give me $100 a year. Yeah, I don't make it easy. I don't set it up for you so that you can just automatically, because I don't like it. I don't like it when there's an automatic withdrawal. If you're still enjoying it each month, send me 10 bucks or send me $100 all at once. Or if you can't afford to do a donation, there's a couple other ways you can support the show. You can tell everybody about it. That's a good way. You can order merch if you need a t-shirt, or you can order one of my stand-up CDs or DVD. Everything available on Amazon and iTunes, and you can listen to them for free on Pandora and Spotify. But if you like a hard copy, tell me if you want it signed or something. You can order it through JackieCation.com on the merch page. There's Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirts and regular Dork Forest t-shirts that are also available on that. And they're union made here in the United States, so they run a little big, because so do union members here in the United States. See what I did there? Little joke. Other than that, I don't think I did Vilmos. Vilmos fixes my website, the one that I've just been talking about so much. If you need website design, check the notes, because there's a link to him, and then you can hire him to fix your website. Another way to support the show? You can use the Amazon banner on JackieCation.com to order your items from Amazon through that banner. I get a little bit of a kickback. Stand-up comedy. I do it. You can watch it live. You can watch me do live Dork Forests, too. That's what I use the donation money for. Travel to get to these places. So, stand-up this week, I'm in Portland, Oregon, doing the Bridgetown Comedy Festival. 1 million shows. That's right. I'm doing a live Dork Forest, which will be super fun. And then I will be doing a bunch of stand-up shows and a weird PRI panel game show with the guy who wrote Fight Club, who I really want to meet, because I didn't get that movie when I saw it, and then I got it like a minute later. I always get the movie after everybody else gets the movie. I'm not that quick in the uptake when it comes to the movies. Doesn't mean I'm not smart, just means I don't always get that stuff. And I'm not getting dumber as I get older. Been dumb like this since I was a kid, just so you know. Let's listen to the Dork Forest. Because this is a great episode, you guys. I had a really fun time. And thanks for listening. Take care of each other out there. Let us begin. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I am in my living room with Ian Abramson, stand-up comic. And do you host 7 Minutes in Purgatory?
I do, yeah. I host it, and that's my show.
So that's your show, and then you film it. Or
right.
Do you just have an audience watching it, or both?
Right. So the show functions in a way that comics perform to a camera in one room,
yeah,
and the audience watches in a separate room. So it's real easy to just hit record on the camera that they're performing to.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. And then you upload that to YouTube.
Right. We also record the audience so that we can put the laughter over it. That way the comics can then watch and see how they did.
Oh, that, okay. Well,
yeah.
Then I'm reconciled. I'm reconciled.
Jackie was a little nervous or skeptical about that.
I want to know part of it. I want to know part of me not getting the instant gratification that is why I do stand-up comedy.
I totally understand. Yeah, yeah.
That's, it's got to be the biggest psych experience ever, like experiment or...
Right. It really was started as an experiment. I wasn't trying to torture comics. That just kind of was the result.
Just a nice byproduct.
Right, yeah.
We have totally gotten into it just because I introduced the name of the show, which is 7 Minutes in Purgatory. Mm-hmm. Do you go youtube.com/7minutesinpurgatory?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, or, they'll find it.
Yeah,
or ianabramson.com.
Right, and, exactly.
Okay, mm-hmm. So, and then, and you're on Twitter at Ian Abramson.
Correct.
And you do stand up out of Chicago, living here in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. grew up here. We're going to get into your dorkdom in a second, but
great.
Let me just talk about the 7 minutes in purgatory, because I have one more question about it.
Yeah, by all means.
Which is, do people end up using a lot of saving lines? Because they're just like, they told the joke and they get no response, and you kind of want to go, well, maybe that's not as well written as I thought it was. Or
right. What I love about getting to watch the show is that there's a very wide range of how comics will perform to it, because, you know, I wanted to see what happens when there is just nothing. It's not that the comic is bombing. It's not that
right.
they're killing. It's just that they don't know how they're doing.
Right.
So some comics will go into a saving line. Some will try to riff. Some will just try to power through the material.
Right.
Know? And you're watching them sweat, realizing like they're just hoping.
Just practicing.
Right.
They're just essentially running lines.
Yeah.
Which is funny because Maria Bamford runs lines.
Oh.
In front of her mirror.
Interesting.
And when we play Joke Machine, we'll do like 20-minute chunks at each other. And I've heard all of the material.
Right.
She's heard all of my material. So there will be a polite sort of, no, that's good.
Right.
That's coming right along.
Yeah.
And the only correct response in that situation is, that's totally coming out. That's a lot tighter than it was.
Right.
So has she ever been on?
No. I'm hoping that she will be at some point.
Sure.
As I'd love to have you.
Of
know?
Course.
But I'm
reconciled
hold it
to it. Yeah. For anyone who doesn't.
I realize that it sounds bizarre and
terrifying and pointless is what it is.
Right.
What,
yeah.
Is what
yeah.
it came to me. But now it's kind of the fact that you're willing to edit it and you don't sweeten
right.
it. You don't do
right.
anything.
No.
You're just like, no.
Mm-hmm.
People just. Are they gonna?
And the thing is that the audience sits down knowing what they're watching. So
right.
they are so excited to watch the comics kind of, they're living in the struggle with the comedian and they
yeah.
love it. So they're laughing very hard.
That's
I've
awesome.
Never seen a comic not do well. But again, like I said, when comics are like, I don't know, I'm like, I get it, but I hope you watch it and see.
And then you will want to do it.
Than you'd
yeah.
think, right.
Okay. So I asked for a list of your dorkdoms.
That's right.
Number one on that list. We got to go there because it cracks me up.
Yeah.
McDonald's Land?
McDonald's Land. I am all about. I've been researching McDonald's Land for over a decade.
Just your own personal poll kind of thing?
Just,
or was there any? Because I have my own personal poll that I like poor driving.
Right.
Turns out BMW drivers, they're the winners right now. I have no idea why, but it's none of my business where they want to go, clearly,
right. yeah.
because they're constantly switching lanes and not letting anyone know and cutting people off. So why McDonald's Land? McDonald's, is it called McDonald's Land?
Right. Well, so McDonald's Land, when I say McDonald's Land, I'm using it as an all-encompassing term for any mascot that they've used over the years.
Okay.
Right.
So it's not just the ball with the kids have peed in.
No.
It's not just
right.
the slides.
Those are just based on McDonald's Land, as far as I'm concerned. McDonald's Land is the fictional world that the Grimace, the Hamburglar, Mayor McCheese, Ronald McDonald know.
All of those
and come
people
from.
Live in.
Right.
Wow, how many people do live in McDonald's Land?
Over the years, there's been a large cast of characters.
Over a dozen. Would you say?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Really?
Yeah, because you've got all these minor characters. Let me start
okay,
by saying
please.
What fascinates me about McDonald's Land is that when I say the Hamburglar, you have a specific image of what that means. You have
yes,
some
I
kind
do.
Of connection
yes.
to the Hamburglar in the same way that you would if somebody said Spider-Man or they said George Washington.
Yeah.
You know? But the Hamburglar was made, created, developed over the course of decades just to sell hamburgers. Like in a 30-second spot, the Hamburglar pops up. As does Ronald McDonald and Grimace, and we
yeah.
get this idea like these characters are friends. This is a bad guy. Anyway, buy our hamburgers.
Right.
And our entire lives since
yeah.
we were born, these characters existed. But the only reason they exist is to sell hamburgers.
Right. Right. There's no plot. There's no arc.
Right. And
there's the tiniest of arc, though.
Right. Exactly. And
does he ever get caught?
He gets caught constantly.
Every time, right?
Every time.
Every time. Okay.
What I, and because
tricks
they
are
such.
Kids. Remember tricks are for kids?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love food mascots at large, but McDonald's Land
is the king of the,
right,
the castle. All right.
Yeah.
Wow. So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
The other thing that fascinates me about that is because there's so little accountability to the story, you know, they're just trying to sell the hamburgers. That means they'll instantly drop anything that doesn't feed whatever the commercial is. So that means there's horrifying implications to this. Like they've accidentally built a cannon for McDonald's land.
Okay.
In the earliest.
Oh, to protect themselves from the Hamburglar.
Right. They
made themselves into like a pirate ship or something.
There's like they built this whole world with all these different pieces, and so there's all these different they've fleshed out the world more than they realize, because when they're writing one commercial, they've already ditched whatever they were doing in the last commercial.
Right, there's continuity.
Right,
there's
exactly.
There's canon.
Yes,
there's,
exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
In the earliest McDonald's land commercials in the 60s, one, they were ripping off completely H&R Puffin stuff. If you go right, and they got sued for it.
Oh, they did.
Oh yeah, they can no longer use Mayor McCheese legally. That said, grew up knowing who Mayor McCheese was.
I have.
He was never on the air when I was alive, but I knew exactly who Mayor McCheese was. How did that happen?
Did they allude to him?
The only place that he would pop up is like hand painted murals in individual franchise restaurants.
Okay.
So you get this vague idea that there's Big Mac, the chief of police.
Yes.
And Mayor McCheese. And then
Big Mac was the chief of police?
The chief of police.
I did not know.
Right. Which also means then Big Mac is the chief of police, but then Mayor McCheese is the mayor. So it takes one more patty to enforce the laws than to make them.
Well, isn't that the way it is? Doesn't that really resonate with everyone?
It's true.
So Mayor McCheese, did he look like an H.R. Puffin stuff?
He looked very much like H&R Puffin stuff.
But like all of them? Doesn't the Hamburger Burglar himself look like it?
They all look like H&R Puffin stuff characters.
But
so they got sued.
One.
And that was like the first kind of transformation, because the first commercials tried to tell a cohesive story in 30 seconds. So it might be that the Grimace shows up, steals a bunch of shakes, and they try to trick the Grimace into getting the shakes back, and then end. They're in
Grimace
this world.
Was also a thief?
Grimace started off as a bad guy with six arms.
Oh, okay.
And he's supposed to vaguely look like a shake.
Okay. Oh, weird.
Yeah.
That was unsuccessful.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
that never worked.
Or at the very least, in the same way that the Hamburglar was after hamburgers and Captain Crook was after fish fillets,
Captain
the Grimace.
Crook.
Right. Yeah.
Of course he was after the fish fillets.
Right.
I remember. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. These are the deep cuts of McDonald's land.
That is
after the shakes.
Cuts. Yeah.
Right. So once they got sued, they were basically like, okay, well, we have these characters. America already knows and loves the Hamburglar.
Right.
So if we adjust the way that they look and start putting them in the real world rather than this fictional...
the town.
Right, exactly. McDonald's land.
McDonald's land.
This is McDonald's land.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
Which was where the real... So they're like skirting the edge of the law.
Right.
And they're like, okay, we'll take them out of McDonald's land. Mm-hmm. They won't be in a H&R Puffin stuff like world.
Right, exactly.
So that will separate them one degree from this lawsuit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everyone knows who these people are, these mm-hmm. puppets are.
Right.
So what did they look more like H&R Puppet stuff, and then they redesigned the characters?
So they stopped using certain characters. Captain Crook dropped off. There was a guy named the Professor that just disappeared entirely.
I miss Captain Crook. I remember Captain freaking Crook.
Oh, man.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
There's a guy named the Professor, which was just like a general inventor that would like help them solve whatever the issue was.
Okay. Sort of like the Sherlock Holmes of the thing where he was like, oh, I know what happened.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Using science.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Again, in 30 seconds though. So it's just like real quick. And then this is the Professor.
Mm-hmm.
Birdie, interesting to me at least, did not exist yet. Birdie came a little later.
Who's Birdie?
Birdie is the female character that represents the breakfast menu. She's Birdie the early bird.
Is she a bird?
She is, yep.
Always crashing into stuff.
She has aviator goggles and pink overalls.
She has an Amelia Earhart,
yes.
Essentially.
Yeah, oh, that's a guy. I've never heard Amelia Earhart, but
that's because
it.
I have an Amelia Earhart that I bought at California Land, speaking of land.
That's great. Love it.
And I like to somehow lounge, some occasionally lounge around with my Amelia Earhart hat. In between that book, those two bookcases, you'll see my bow and arrow.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Got that for Christmas. Pretty sweet.
That's
pretty
beautiful.
Sweet. Yeah.
I love it.
That's where we're keeping it. Andy's like, we can't keep it there. And I said, why not? What if somebody tries to break into the place? I will have access to my bow and arrow. He's like, oh my God, call 911. That sounds like a response to some sort of cries of sexism. Birdie, the breakfast menu.
Yeah. Responding McDonald's at the front lines of responding to
all
sexism.
Things needed.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
$15 an hour, McDonald's.
Yes,
please
exactly.
Do that. That'd be awesome. Anyway,
one of the more interesting things that were just accidentally kind of brushed over about the original McDonald's Land commercials to me is that they would really try to make the world feel very rich by having hamburger patches with which were talking hamburgers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
Right.
So, that's insane.
Right. Implying that then the Big Mac and Mayor McCheese then started off in these hamburger patches and then grew, developed.
Yes. They went to school just like tiny hamburgers do.
Yeah.
And then eventually became mayor and police of chief
right.
of police.
Yeah. I don't know if when they hit puberty, that's when they get a full body or what it is.
Right. When they break themselves off the stem and call it a day.
Yeah.
That is.
That also means then that the Hamburglar to Mayor McCheese is stealing baby heads.
Right. He's essentially a kidnapper.
Right, yeah.
And a weird murderer to some extent, as we all are, as we eat hamburgers.
Yeah, that are being sold to us by these people.
When is this? Is this 1970 that this
started? This is in the 70s,
That it first started. It was early 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Because this is when H&R Puffin stuff was on the air. It's all kind of vaguely psychedelic. Right, in
It kept going.
Yeah. Yeah, only after Super Size Me did they really actively try to get away from using these characters. But you still see the occasional reference to them.
Okay. Now I want them to bring them back.
You want them? Yeah. You're telling me? Yeah.
Do you have plot ideas that they could use? Have you written any like, you guys, you need to bring this back. This is the ad campaign that you threw away.
What would be scary to me is they got away from it because they're trying to promote healthier meals for kids.
Supersize Me.
Yeah.
And then
imagine a muscular Grimace, which is basically just a pile of fat, but then tightened up. What would that
be? Right. That is not. Yeah. The gun show with Grimace. That isn't. It's not enough.
In the background of the earliest McDonald's Land commercials, there were volcanoes that spouted shakes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. This is like a nostalgic walking through. Like, how many were there? Have you seen most of them?
The commercials?
Yeah.
I've seen as many as I could. But again, this is over 50 years of advertising from one of the companies that have spent more on advertising than anyone else. You know, maybe not as much as Coca-Cola. But,
or the Catholic Church. Those are the three.
Right. Cast of characters.
They always compare McDonald's to the Catholic Church because all of their money is in real estate.
Oh, that's funny.
Because all the McDonald's are owned by the McDonald's Corporation.
Right.
And then they franchise the business to the people.
Oh, that's great.
All of the churches are owned by the Catholic Church. And then I assume they franchise the business to the priest. And
the implication of a shake volcano means that the core of McDonald's Land is shake.
Is shake?
Right.
Is made out of ice cream.
Different flavored shake. So somehow there's tunnels of chocolate shake, vanilla shake, and strawberry shake coming up from the core of wherever McDonald's Land is.
Wherever McDonald's has come, there are giant. So, all right. So the streets are paved with what? In that golden... gold and white cement kind of thing, like the arches?
Most of the McDonald's Land would be like dirt or like cobblestone kind of aesthetic to it.
With the gold, with the yellow.
Right, yeah,
because there had to be arches all, if I remember correctly, there were arches all over the place.
Yeah. And again, what I love about it is that you remember these, you have distinct memories of this.
Right.
This
right. They've stolen all of my hope that I will ever finish the Iliad in the fact that now I have in my head that Mayor McCheese,
Yeah.
I want a new mayor. I want a new mayor.
Yeah, absolutely. There's commercials from like the 80s where the Hamburglar will steal some hamburgers.
Okay.
Big Mac can't stop him. Mayor McCheese asks Ronald McDonald to stop the Hamburglar.
Yeah.
So he gets these stolen goods back and then eats them in front of the people made out of the product.
Oh my God. So the human clown dude.
Right. Yeah.
Ronald McDonald does eventually get the bag of burgers back from the Hamburglars.
Yep.
Because it was always a bag of burgers.
Right. A bag of burgers.
Right. Yeah. And then he would steal them and then lumber away. Mm-hmm. Lumber.
Right.
And then somehow he would get in a giant cartoonish cage.
Yep.
Jail.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. What else?
So for the volcanoes, jumping back to that, in those commercials, because everything was puppets, they wanted to ground it in our world somehow. So there would always be like Ronald and two human children that were visiting McDonald's land.
Oh, okay.
So then the implication there is that somehow there's a link between our world and McDonald's land. These human children are popping up to visit and hang out with Ronald.
Right. There's a wardrobe. They go through the back of it, and it's a Narnia-like existence, but it's only full of GMOs.
Right. And then in the middle is Shake. In the middle of their world. Right.
And it was, they were never big worlds either. I mean, it was a very small, because it is a 30 second to 45 second.
Absolutely.
Were they always 30 seconds or were they?
I'm using 30 seconds as just a rough
estimate. Because it might have been 45, but whatever. Man, that's crazy.
Flash forward to about the 80s. They try to start advertising the Shamrock Shake.
Oh, yeah.
That's when
it must have been invented.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So the Shamrock Shake, and they try to find a fun way to advertise this and make it exciting for the kids.
Right.
Who is their shake mascot, the Grimace.
Mm-hmm.
So they create this story that once a year, the Grimace's uncle comes over from Ireland to bring us Shamrock Shakes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Uncle O'Grimacy, if you're at a computer right now, you can Google it.
Uncle it's a big, O'Grimacy.
Giant... Big giant green Grimace is wearing a fun vest and a top hat.
And shamrocks.
Right.
And has the accent, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why wouldn't he? And do they talk? I forget if they talk in these things. What are their accents like? For the longest time,
Hamburglar would only say "robble robble,"
okay,
which was no longer the case. In about the 90s is when
is when he got his words
right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes people develop at a different at levels, right? So,
yeah.
But the mayor had full.
Absolutely, he has like a fun kind of like, "Oh, I'm Mayor McCheese." That was I'm embarrassed for myself.
Warble?
Yes, a bit of a warble. Thank you.
Go.
Yeah, you caught it better than I did it.
I knew what you're saying.
Yeah,
How about the police chief?
A little more gruff, but
Big Mac?
Yes, the same kind of definitely has a hamburger voice. This is this world.
It's made up of hamburger voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So
we know that shakes. From the McDonald's land core. But
right.
That means that Uncle O'Grimacy is in Ireland specifically, in our world, is coming out of Ireland and bringing Shamrock Shakes. So there's so McDonald's is accidentally somehow implying that in our core, somewhere deep beneath the earth, maybe like oil,
right.
There are large amounts of Shamrock Shake, but only in a very particular
only
part of
accessible
Europe.
From Ireland
right.
Because of sovereignty. That's what it is. It's the first time the United States has ever respected anyone's sovereignty, and it's Shamrock Shakes.
Absolutely.
You guys. And it's the best. So we have Captain Crook, the professor.
Right.
We have what's the name of the police chief? The
Big Mac.
It's just his just name
yep.
is Big Mac.
Big Mac.
Is
Chief
he
of police.
Is he also an like a Boston Irish cop? I want him to be a and then the Mayor McCheese and Grimace and who and then his uncle.
Right.
And then Birdie.
You got Birdie.
Birdie the bird.
Mm-hmm.
And
you've got the Fry Guys, which were originally called Fry Goblins.
Oh,
those
right.
look like little pom poms. The
oh,
colorful
yeah,
pom poms.
Yeah.
Yep. See, I say this, and you know exactly who I mean. Like,
right.
That's,
as soon as you say it out loud, I have a distinct picture in my
absolutely.
Mind of a weird multicolored pile of fries.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense because
right.
fries are yellow.
Yeah.
And, and they're the best thing at McDonald's, so why would you ruin
and
that?
And they're always chasing after – they're trying to eat fries. so.
Well, the fry guys are always trying to eat
fries.
They're
trying to eat fries. Yeah. They're obsessed with eating fries and they vaguely look like fries.
Yeah.
So it's just like they're like cannibal. The rabid vermin of the McDonald's land.
They are the vermin. They're because they'll pile by mm-hmm. in like a Muppet
yep.
kind of
yeah.
pile.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right. So we have at least 8 characters here.
Right.
What else? What can you remember? Any other? Are there other criminals? We got Captain Crook and the Grimace, and then who was? No, just them, right?
Right.
Oh, the Hamburglar.
The Hamburglar, right?
Of fame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Originally, the Grimace. Did you say that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Captain Crook. Remember the fish sandwich? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell you the last time I had a McDonald's and a fish sandwich. It had to have been at least, yeah, mm-hmm. It had to be Lent.
Right.
Which meant I was going to church, you guys, which meant I was in high school. So it's 1,000 years ago. And yeah, I was doing something about Lent.
Right.
That's how long ago it was. So sorry.
If you go to a McDonald's that has been around for a very long time, you can still see a play set based on these characters because the franchises.
Oh, they didn't get rid of them.
Right. Why?
Okay. Like,
you know, if you yeah. own the business, why would you spend all that money to
replace stuff that is working?
Right.
And
yeah.
is now.
Right. So
there's one over in Hollywood that's one of the original.
Oh, really?
McDonald's, because it started here in California, mm-hmm. to my knowledge.
By San Bernardino, about half an hour from where I grew up.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I bet you there's some, if you guys want to head out and do like a journey.
It is a sad place, I will tell you that.
Oh, that the original?
Oh, yeah.
Is
yeah.
it just, they haven't retroed it?
Maybe
made
it's
it all...
just sad to me. Maybe it's like, I'm sure it's like a fine McDonald's, but to me, I was expecting like a big homecoming with Grimace statues and just.
Right.
Yeah. But
what got you into McDonald's?
I was on Wikipedia, which was at the time like a new kind of it was new to me,
right? Yeah.
And I was just trying to see what I could find on Wikipedia, kind of mm-hmm. like trying. Okay, let's see if I can find something that Wikipedia doesn't have much on,
right?
And I came across Mayor McCheese, and somebody had edited the article to make it look like he was the mayor of this island that I guess the government has done a bunch of different tests on.
To create the mutants.
Right.
That are the inhabitants of McDonald's
land.
Yeah,
that was the implication of the person that re-edited this. And it was like, what? And that made me start Googling around to the other, just to find out what the real story was. And it immediately fascinated me.
And this was 10 years ago, I will have this conversation whenever anybody has any more information.
Right, yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so, I talk about McDonald's land the way that some people will talk about the JFK shooting. Like, it's like, I need to realize, like, okay, like, I'm not going to get everybody on board here.
Right.
There's a time and a place.
But there's seriously, there was, and it was a very more obvious kind of cover-up.
Right,
is what they were trying mm-hmm. to do. They're not actually trying to hide what they're trying to do from you, the people at McDonald's. They would genuinely like you to come.
Absolutely.
And sure, give us your change for the sick children. But other than that, just get a burger.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
Get a soda and some fries.
Mm-hmm.
And get the hell out.
Yeah.
Do you still eat at McDonald's?
Absolutely. You know, I buy into the, it's like, it works. How could I not? Where else am I going to go see my favorite characters in the world? You know,
your favorite characters will be there. One of the last times I ate at McDonald's, and I eat at a McDonald's probably twice a year.
Okay. Yeah.
And, I try not to, but sometimes it's the only thing around
sure.
and it's fine.
Yeah.
But, I was on the phone with Maria Bamford and, she was there when I ordered the following items. I said, I would like a medium Diet Coke. I would like a medium coffee with three or four creams in it. Mm-hmm. And, a kid's cone made out of not even ice milk. We don't even know what that's made out of. And, that was 7 cents.
Right.
And, the woman goes, okay, pull up to the first, thing. Mm-hmm. And so then I get back on the phone with Maria and she's like, that was the greatest order I've ever heard in my life. Because that's really all I want. Like, I don't really want the squishy bread that's on a McDonald's hamburger.
Right. Sure.
I like Thousand Island dressing as much as the next person, but rarely, but always nice. I assume the next person doesn't like it all the time.
Right.
And, but there's, I mean, I really just want the ice cream cone.
Sure.
And
yeah.
the soda and the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
I like
I'm
their chocolate
that.
Sundaes. It's like a fun,
oh, that's
it
nice.
Brings
Soft
me back
serve.
To a real specific childhood memory. You know,
yeah.
that's what a lot of, they do.
Yeah, and they milk that for the mm-hmm. for everything it's worth.
Absolutely. They've Their fries some... have a very specific taste. It makes me feel a very specific way.
They might have invented branding. They very easily.
They are definitely pioneers in it, if nothing else.
Yeah,
right.
I think, yeah, they were early, those are early days with, so that, quite honestly, that's 25 minutes of us talking about the Hamburglar.
Oh, that's great.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
But I also now. Do you wanna do Buster Keaton's career, or do you want to do 100 issues of Spider-Man?
I mean, listen,
I've never
we
seen a Buster Keaton movie. I've
oh.
I've only seen clips, and I understand his work is exceptional. I want to
sure.
see all of them.
Yeah,
I don't. It turns out the only thing I'm watching right now is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay,
so
yeah.
it isn't enough. I've also watched 2 episodes of Daredevil. It's
sure.
also not enough because I understand there's a lot of good programming happening.
Sure,
Orphan
yeah.
Black.
Yeah,
whatever.
So I really love silent film. I
okay.
won't pretend like when I watch it, it's like, you know, it was made in a very different time.
Okay.
So the comedy is very different. I'm not doubling.
It's a lot broader, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But also very it's subtle in a very different way, you know?
Really?
Absolutely. It's just. It's completely physical. The comedy.
Oh, it has to be, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. But you have early film. You have these people that were that had come up in vaudeville,
right?
You and I,
the circus,
right? Yeah,
yes,
yeah. You and I in as
comics,
modern yeah. comics, came up in a very different world. You and I even came up in very different
sure.
comedy landscapes.
yeah, the one-nighters of the early 90s are not in your in your repertoire, probably.
Right, right. Yeah, they're legendary.
You're not missing anything. You're fine. I'm sure you're creating your own journey, and that's perfect.
The journey for someone like Buster Keaton, though, was he started out, and his parents weren't even on the vaudeville circuit. They were on the medicine show circuit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So that means that as a baby, he would have to be backstage as his parents were doing an act for the equivalent to a one-nighter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A medicine show.
Trying to sell, like, snake oil or something?
Right. They would be.
It was a sales thing. It wasn't a show so much as a show to sell.
Exactly.
Merch.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get a crowd because we're doing something cool. And at the end, hey, do you have aches and pains? Well, I have something that can make it go away.
Okay. So his parents were actual performers. So they did mm-hmm. other things besides just talk about the snake oil.
Oh, yeah. They probably weren't even
danced,
the ones that sold the snake oil itself.
Oh, they were hired.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there would be people.
I didn't know there was a medicine.
Their whole lives, and this is like very low key, and this is like low class entertainment. This isn't.
It's like the miners,
right?
It's yeah, very much. But before vaudeville,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole level before that, like an amateur,
right.
not even amateur, and below that there mm-hmm. had to be amateur.
Yeah, and whereas you and I might expect to come up doing having a day job until we can get more of a career.
Yeah.
This is what they are living off of. This
right.
is, you know, they're traveling around the country, feeding a baby, starting a family
right.
With other families.
Doing this medicine show.
Right. Something that I love about the medicine show part of Buster Keaton's life. Buster got that nickname because they had a family friend, a different couple that, was doing these medicine shows with him, saw that Buster Keaton would like tumble and get right back up and he was,
yeah.
and nicknamed him Buster.
Okay.
That family, they decided they were going to make a break. They were just going to like commit to trying to get into vaudeville.
Okay.
Really, they moved to New York, really pushed to develop their own thing.
Yeah.
Became huge.
Oh.
And that was, why Buster Keaton's family decided, you know what? We're better than them. We can do better than that and move there as well. that family.
Okay. That family inspired the Keaton mm-hmm. family.
Correct.
To move to New York and give it a shot.
And the father of that family was Harry Houdini.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So the Houdini family
right.
was also medicine show people.
Yeah, yeah.
And little known fact, Harry Houdini, born in Appleton, Wisconsin. Raised in Appleton, Wisconsin, there when obviously not on the road. clearly he was in the medicine show circuit.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. The medicine show circuit. I want to just talk about
the lowest of the low, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's... Good Lord. All right. So they moved to New York when he's a child.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to start our own thing.
Right. And Buster Keaton at this point is now as a 5 or 6 year old watching his dad do incredible pratfalls on a level that you and I will never get to see because the infrastructure of vaudeville is gone. We won't get to see.
Nobody has to learn how to do that and not kill themselves.
Right. Yeah. And
the last thing we have is the Carol Burnett show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And no one has to not only not kill themselves, but not kill themselves in a way that looks like they are killing themselves. That is both
and
more
do it three
exciting.
Shows a night.
Absolutely. At three shows.
That's crazy. I have to do three shows, I'm always angry. I'm always like, why would you have a third show?
Right. Yeah. And then imagine, you know, you have your significant other and child with you on the road. Because that is where you live.
I know a couple of guys that are features that make a living as features as stand-up comics and have children. And you're like, well, how is that even possible? Because you don't make any, I mean, you might come home with $150 a week.
Yeah.
If you go home.
Yeah.
And essentially your wife is raising your child.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting that they just took her with, you know, they were like, no, we're doing it together.
Yeah. And well, the Buster Keaton's mother would then become part of the act. You know, the thing with vaudeville is you would kind of become the part of the buffalo that could not be used. You know, like you would have to.
I know the analogy. I don't know how that applies to the vaudeville.
So you would have to get skills that then would be able to make the family money on the road.
Oh, okay.
So everybody had to play an instrument. She would learn how to be a straight
up.
Man. Right. Yeah.
Right. Because you're not. We can use your body.
Right. Exactly.
As a placeholder at the mm-hmm. very least. You can be a pick.
Yes. Yeah. There was this act that developed, and this is, again, Buster Keaton is a child watching this and just kind of taking in a general knowledge and experience of this.
Yeah.
But Buster Keaton's dad's act involved putting a very long table on the stage and then a chair on top of the table and then jumping from the... from the ground onto the table.
Wow.
Which sound like so many descriptions of vaudeville sound literally unbelievable.
Right.
The only reason that we have to believe that there's at least some kind of truth to them is because there's
too many people saw it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a certain amount of P.T. Barnum, like, hey, if you come here, you'll see this. Oh, mm-hmm. It wasn't really what you thought it was. But if you're touring that's the reputation you'll get for like, oh, they're not going to deliver what they say they're going to deliver. You know?
Right. But then you show up and someone just leapt vertically.
Right.
Feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The physical stuff is amazing. I mean, when you watch, I can't remember. Of course I can't remember his name. It's a go-to.
Sure.
Jack Tripper.
Sure.
He had his real name and he died and he was in Eight Simple Rules. What was his name?
Now I'm forgetting too.
Yeah. Whatever. Everybody else knows. They're yelling.
Right. Yeah.
And there he was. And so he was on Three's Company and he would do those pratfalls that were, I mean, it was, I remember when I first started doing stand-up that mm-hmm. people didn't respect it.
Right.
They were like, oh, that's that guy who could do that. But if you think back on it, mm-hmm. that's an amazing physical achievement.
Oh,
to be able to nail that every time.
Right.
Every time. That's crazy.
So Buster Keaton's parents developed this act where the mom would be playing violin as he would like jump over her and then like fall backwards and at the last second flip over onto the ground and doing all this in a way that have like comedic beats. You know, it's not just that he's doing stunts. Mm-hmm. It's that he's making this crowd laugh very hard.
Oh, right.
So then they kind of start rising through the ranks and they're desperately trying to get into like the major vaudeville circuits. And
does he have siblings?
He did. I believe he was the oldest.
Okay.
So that meant that if he's like six or seven, they're
babies
younger,
and little.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah. Buster Keaton's dad sees one of the major theater owners on the street mm-hmm. and says, "You need to let me audition for you right now."
Okay.
Buster Keaton is with him and he does his act and the guy is kind of like, "Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the best. Like, I can book anyone that I want, you know?" And he sees Buster Keaton and they kind of start improvising this act together. And that's the thing where he's like, "All right, I'm going to give you a little run here."
Okay.
And so then they have to, the three of them, the mom,
the dad,
and the son, they develop this act where the mom is trying to keep the peace. The dad is a drunkard that's incredibly frustrated with his wife and very upset at his kid.
Uh-huh.
And it becomes a national sensation. They're the hottest act around.
Over
the course of a couple of years. And
because everyone's living that.
Right. And, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're feeling it was a
what
lot
year
more
is that?
Improvisational. Oh, I don't know
right.
the years.
Early
the
1900s.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
Well before film is a thought.
Yeah.
And their act was very improvisational. They would make up, they would just like, be making these left turns that other people weren't quite willing to take those chances on.
Right.
So, one of the major things that they would make sure to do every night, that again was just kind of riffed in the moment.
Yeah.
Originally, he would get very frustrated with Buster, pick him up, and throw him into the audience.
Whoa.
Yeah, this is,
wow.
again, an eight-year-old that
right,
he's
right.
picking up his
physically,
child. Yes,
his own child.
Yes, yes. And there's no cable like, whoa, he's flying over the audience. He is actually being thrown.
And has to be caught by the audience if he's caught.
Has to hit the audience in a way that he won't get hurt and won't hurt them.
Right. Because once he kicks somebody in the face,
right.
it's
yeah.
going to be the worst.
There was one night that he was in front of a particularly rambunctious, angry crowd and they kept yelling things out. It was like half an hour of just a mess. I'm sure you've encountered crowds where
sure,
you're not,
sure.
not
yeah,
particularly.
Yeah.
Right. A third show on a Saturday kind of crowd.
Right.
Yeah.
Just not into it.
Right.
But they were drunk and rowdy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so he went and whispered, in his son's ear, "Just tighten your body," and
okay.
targeted a very particular person in the audience and threw his son
at the guy.
Yep. Broke his ribs.
Oh my God.
Used his son
to get the audience. Who's like, "I believe I'm performing up
right,
here. Turn
yeah.
your cell phone
right.
off."
Right. Can you imagine? Oh man.
Right. It wouldn't have been okay if he would have whipped a stool.
Right.
But to throw a child.
A child.
Makes everyone laugh.
Right.
And that guy, shut up.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And so he hit the right guy?
Yes.
Anecdotally?
Yes, he did. Yeah. Yep. And broke the right ribs. So.
And cracked the correct ribs.
Yeah.
And all was revealed.
Uh-huh.
Wow. That is crazy. So.
His mom ended up sewing, part of a broom handle into the back of his,
like his shirt,
something? Right, so that he could be more easily picked up and thrown by the father.
Oh my God!
Yeah, because this was like, you know, this is the kind of thing you close on, throwing
right,
your child into the audience.
That is a closer. You really can't follow that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna need the kid back for the final bit. It's gonna be hard.
Right.
So how did he do that for as long as until the kid grew too big? Or?
Right, and then they were still developing other acts, and
right.
There were a. Several years when they weren't allowed to perform in New York because of child labor laws. Turns out people aren't thrilled that.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. You know, some people are thrilled.
So post Teddy Roosevelt.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're,
They're like, I don't think it's the same thing as working in a in the shirtwaist factory.
Right, right.
But I get what you're saying. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this made like national headlines, and that meant that a few years later, when he was able to perform on his own, that also made headlines. The kid is back, you know, like,
oh, just, right.
It's like people are pumped. They missed it a couple years ago. Now they can see it, and they're selling out these crazy theaters.
Right, right.
And in the meantime, Buster's still been hanging out around vaudeville people. So he's been learning how to sharpshoot. From across, he's
like
been
whatever learning. Whatever weird talents exactly, that everybody else is like, right. This is going to be my hook.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, well, teach me how to do that.
Yeah.
Them not knowing that right, he was that film was going to be invented and Bob Hope was going to steal everybody's act.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
Fair enough. So, wow.
So by the time that film comes around, you have a virtuoso comedy performer. We'll never encounter someone whose entire life.
Right. He was created in a crucible that doesn't exist right. anymore, yeah, essentially, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Charlie Chaplin, the same kind of story.
Yeah. But not American.
That's, no, I mean, great, great point.
No. Great, always a great point.
No, so, Charlie Chaplin is amazing by his own right. I'm fascinated by the type of story that Buster Keaton decided to tell and the type of technical approach that he would have to comedy, because film is brand new. So
right.
nobody knows the idea of a shot, the idea of editing. These are all being developed in front of Buster Keaton's eyes.
And like, who directed Buster Keaton?
So who? The idea of a director was very new. Even this is, basically, he was hired to be a comedic performer, but then within 5 years, he was making all of his own stuff. You know?
Okay. So he had complete control 5 years later.
Right, right.
Or to some extent.
And then 10 years after that, he had no control. He was hired by MGM and kind of locked in the studio system. I mean, the world had moved on in a
right,
lot of
and
ways.
Then just they just sort of didn't know what to do with him anymore.
Right, yeah.
And when it came to talkies and stuff, did he?
He played around with that. You know, man's got to eat.
He has his own children, no doubt, at this point.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's such a short, tragically short arc of when he's getting to be this huge... this huge lauded comedy star.
Yeah.
At the top of the top with the other Charlie Chaplin, Harold Lloyd, these people that are
Harold figures. Lloyd. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Harold Lloyd, for you listeners at home.
and me, I remember is his name. I don't even know who he is.
There's a famous picture of a silent movie of a man wearing glasses hanging off of a clock. That is often used in things.
And I always thought it was Buster Keaton.
Right, yeah.
That's Harold Lloyd.
That's Harold Lloyd.
Oh, well, good for me. Yeah, well, there you go. Now I know things.
Yeah, that's a movie called Safety Last. And
excellent name.
The way that they had to film these things, nowadays you could green screen something like that pretty easily.
Sure.
But they weren't going to build
we
a full
clock. We could
green
screen.
We literally could, yeah. So they had to use the actual clock in the air and design these stunts and,
was safety. Was there a net?
They would build like a platform with some pillows that he could
would break
aim for
his fall?
If he fell. Right. That he, so,
wow.
But he could very easily miss,
right.
You know,
wow.
So, I mean, go and watch, some Safety Last clips.
Right.
With that in mind, and it's like, yeah, that is actually amazing.
That's insane.
Yeah.
They're just like, essentially, it's just watching boxing to some extent. You're like, oh, maybe you'll live.
Right.
Maybe you won't.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a, wow. Okay.
So he started making shorts. He started making his own shorts. He gets into feature-length movies. If I was going to tell people to watch one Buster Keaton thing...
what would it be?
It would be Sherlock Jr., because I think it is a great hook, and it shows his physical performance in a great way, and also the technical experiments that he did so well.
Okay.
Sherlock,
is it,
It's on Netflix.
And it's on Netflix.
Yeah, so
oh, wow.
It's really easy to watch.
Wow, streaming.
It's, I think it's like about an hour, maybe a little more.
Okay.
So, I mean, I get that like the pacing is very different. It's all, you sit down and you got to be like, all right, I'm in the mood to experience something kind of different.
Yes.
But the plot of Sherlock Jr. is that there's a young man that is, that wants to be a detective, but runs the projection booth at a movie theater.
Sure.
So he's just watching detective movies and kind of has these fantasies about being a big detective.
Right at a gumshoe.
Right.
Yeah.
He goes to see his girlfriend. Someone else steals his girlfriend's mom's necklace or something. And he gets accused for it, gets told never to come back.
Right, right.
Goes to work, falls asleep in the projection booth, and here's where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
Buster Keaton, you see like a ghost version of him come out of his body and is like playing with the actual version of his body on screen, which again, he's having to invent this. He's having to say, I want to do this so much that I'm going to figure out how to make this happen.
Right.
You and I, now we could spend 5 hours and make that happen between Google and the technology
and
we
something.
Have.
Yeah.
Right. So then he goes and walks into the movie screen. And there's an incredible sequence where he's interacting with whatever movie is on screen,
right.
And then it switches. So he'll be in a garden and like sitting on a bench, and then all of a sudden it'll switch to snow, and he falls backwards, and he
because the scene changed,
right? Yeah, yeah. And so you're watching him interact. He'll like try to dive into water, and then it's sand, you know, and
right.
I mean, it's an amazing sequence.
Right. And
on every level.
On every level. Mm-hmm. And funny and...
Absolutely. Yeah.
And yeah. Now, you were talking about how, like, the comedy is different.
Right.
Is the comedy different just because it's physical or...
Right. Yeah. I mean, and in the same way that comedy was different 10 years ago, multiply that by 1,000 and you've got just kind of how the sensibility changes and...
But it's still silly.
Absolutely.
And
right.
It's still...
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, it's not going to be, it's not political humor.
Right.
Or if it is, it's political humor done like the Marx Brothers.
Right.
So, which are all very different from,
absolutely.
From, and still funny.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. And that's interesting.
A great example, there's a movie called The General, which people usually, will say
reference.
Is Buster Keaton's best movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great scene where he's a train conductor and he's just been broken up with or something. And he sits on the rails of the train itself or the thing connecting the tires that would make it move. And the train starts moving. So he's going up and down with it. And it's just, it's a great shot of a guy that's so sad and in his own head that he's not realizing he's now on the train.
Right.
And it's just like it's a different
it's like
type
a
of
balancing?
Storytelling, but it's like a great kind of, it's just a great image of this like sad guy that we're getting that information through an interesting, compelling way,
right? Because just the physicality of that, where you're like, but you also get the impression that he genuinely is just like, no, I'm but what is whatever,
absolutely,
and that's fascinating. Oh,
yeah.
that's crazy talk.
Yeah. So
well, I'm a fool for never having watched these programs, and I need to. I'll give it a shot. Sherlock Jr. is on Netflix.
Yep.
That seems
absolutely.
Like an attainable goal.
Yeah.
So that can't be difficult. Wow. All right. Well, did he have a sad life at the end?
He actually had a resurgence. Yeah. So it's closer to a happy ending.
Oh, that's who doesn't love a comeback?
Right. Yeah.
The kid is back.
Yeah. 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 That's right. That's
time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And,
in the '60s, a lot of silent film kind of was rediscovered.
Mm-hmm.
The Marx Brothers and, Laurel and Hardy, all those
Three
guys.
Stooges.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of, started being reappreciated, and it was like kids in the 60s, like, I don't like what my parents like.
What, I like what my grandparents
right,
like.
Right, yeah, let me go further back, you
yes.
know? So he kind of got appreciation and would be flown around and got to do little projects.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he didn't die a millionaire that was, like, worshipped, but he, I'm sure, was very happy.
Oh, good.
Right.
Well, I like the end of that story. That's a good one. There was a movie in the 60s. It was Hercules meets the Three Stooges. And it the Three Stooges are genuinely, they're so old.
Right.
That this movie is in color.
Oh, man.
That's how old they are. Oh, and boy. And it, all it is it's a time travel. It's a time travel movie about the Three Stooges are pharmacist assistants.
Yes.
And the pharmacist is a nerd. And they all go back in time. And everyone thinks he's Hercules because they become slave galley slaves. And the nerd turns into a hunk.
Oh, great.
Even though he loses his glasses, so how does he see anything? Is always the question that I've always had about that movie. I'm like, well, you can't lose your glasses. I failed trig because of that. So it's that's crazy. Now we can touch base on the first 100.
If you don't have time, that's I mean.
No oh no worries. No yeah. Oh yeah yeah no the, you got to dork out some good dork out. This was some good stuff.
Yeah,
it's I had a guy on who was, I was telling you, and now I have spaced his name, of course, a great episode where he talked about how he was rereading all of the Spider-Man.
Right.
Not Spider-Men, but Spider-Man from the 60s. And what are the first 100 issues? When did it start again? He told me, but I forgot.
It's like the early 60s.
It is the early 60s.
Right, like 63, 64-ish. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact year off the top of my head.
Right.
But
it was Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. And
right. The first – they were definitely drawing Marvel comics. The guy that first drew Spider-Man was Steve Ditko.
Right.
And then after around 30 issues – I'm estimating all of this, so if you guys know better than me, I apologize.
Okay.
And then John Romita Jr. came over and – or no, it's John Romita.
Okay.
His son now draws comics.
And oh, fair enough.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But John Romita was the first person to draw Mary Jane and stuff like that. But in the early 60s, the country is in a very interesting place itself. A lot of culture starting to blow up. And
transitioning.
Right, yeah.
The beats to the hippies. To
right.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Vietnam?
But this is, a comic book for children, so it's not like tapped into Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco.
Right.
And the country isn't quite there yet.
You know?
So the first – it starts with Peter Parker being kind of Leave It to Beaver kid that gets superpowers. And it's like, oh, gee, you know?
Yeah.
Did he
say it originally, the responsibility?
Yes. Yeah. That's how the first issue ends. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Stan Lee was definitely trying to be a lot more ambitious with the comics, which is why they did stand out at the time.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to put in those themes of with great power comes great responsibility when he could just end it with like, and now I'm a superhero.
So let's do it.
Right.
Which is what the end of Hero 6 was. I don't know if you saw Hero 6.
I did, yeah.
And I liked it.
I did
but
too.
It wasn't as good as Lego, I thought.
Right.
And,
what is?
And Lego, the only thing as good as Lego movie, quite honestly, The Incredibles.
Oh, I am with you there. I love The Incredibles.
Those are the only ones that really nailed it start to finish.
Absolutely.
And I liked Hero 6,
yeah.
But it wasn't the thing I wanted.
Agreed.
It. At the end of it, you're like, no, you're all fantastic scientists. Why? Oh, but you want to fly. Oh, so that's going to interrupt with you curing cancer. No, I don't approve.
So, right. Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
Absolutely.
So that original story was the original story.
Yeah.
Okay.
I comics had been around long enough. Superman and Batman existed.
Yep.
So, but they were kind of in a campy state, so then Stan Lee is kind of directly responding to that by trying to
be a little more realistic,
right? Just a little more mature, trying to mature in the themes and trying to tie them back together, trying to do some more ambitious storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then as it goes on, the country. The Beatles come to America, and you've got the I Want to Hold Your Hand phase of the country, which is drastically different than where Spider-Man begins.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 years after that, you've got
Haight-Ashbury.
Right.
Yeah.
You've got the much different
the marching in the streets.
Right.
And then 5 years after that, you got Watergate.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah. And,
yeah.
If you read these early Spider-Man comics, it gets to a point where they can't help that's gonna seep in. And
right.
because that's where the world is. That's where these people are writing from.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't matter who the characters are. It's going to, the 9/11 is going to affect every comic book that came out after 2001.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it did.
Yeah.
And it was, some of it was fascinating. Mm-hmm. So that is interesting. It's an interesting anthropological kind of, or I don't know if I'm using that word right. Who cares?
Right.
But psychologically is a way to see it as a parallel to where the country was.
Absolutely.
At.
Yeah.
When was the 100th episode? Do you remember what
year?
I
don't remember what year.
But that was it.
That
kind
was.
Of. Do you
it
remember
was,
the episode?
It was great. No,
do you remember
I
the
don't.
Issue?
I don't.
Okay.
But just those, they're so much fun, and you've got a lot of looks at. People like the Green Goblin and Dr. Octopus that stuck around and people really loved. But then you've got minor villains that you'll see occasionally, like the Vulture or the Chameleon.
Right.
And then you've got people that only popped in for one issue, you know.
Like the Hamburglar.
Right, yeah.
Weirdly enough.
Yeah. there's an issue where he just fights a generic robot design, but he almost takes him down. It's such a compelling issue where this robot is like so close to beating Spider-Man because they have to raise the stakes, you know, and he's like terrorizing the high school and he's able to track how fast Spider-Man is going to go. And
using science,
right?
Using robot
Absolutely.
Technology. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The weirder, the supervillains,
right.
The one-off ones,
yeah.
People are fascinated by, and whenever you're like, I'll be watching all of the TV shows now that are on, and someone will come up and Andy will sit up a little bit and I'm like, who is it? He's like, I can't remember the name of that character, but that is a real character.
Right. Yeah.
From the books.
That's great.
And so it's fun sitting next to someone who can go to the long boxes in their head.
Absolutely.
Because then you can really know what the hell's going to happen. Yeah, well, Ian Abramson, we talked briefly about it, but this was a fascinating episode. McDonaldland for 25 minutes is a new record. And the Shamrock Shake, I think, is fantastic. And then Buster Keaton, which is always nice to find something that I want to watch.
Right.
You know, that I'm like, oh, because if I go down a rabbit hole of McDonaldland.
Absolutely.
Nobody.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, nobody should encourage that. But Buster Keaton, I should definitely see.
Absolutely.
And so everyone at Ian Abramson on Twitter, you got a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
You, IanAbramson.com probably has a link to that Facebook page,
right.
Or you can just Google it.
Right.
And you do stand-up comedy, and you have your show 7 Minutes in Purgatory.
That I do.
The next show here in Los Angeles?
May 11th.
May 11th.
Yeah.
Where is it?
UCB Sunset.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, we've got a great lineup. TJ Miller's on it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Super fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show, and
thanks
for listening, everybody. Take care out there.
Thank
Bye.
You.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?